The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division will come to order February 15th. First item on the agenda is draft 3 of the legislative guide. Mr. Morgan? I want to call committee members' attention that tomorrow is Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Day at the Capitol, and it would be a good idea to touch base with the people that are coming in to talk with them about the issues that are before us and the communications that we've received from various outdoors groups, because they are the people that will know the answers. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure if we have a quorum at this point, but until we do, I'll kind of go over the new draft that they have in their packet.
And Representative Morgan, just briefly, a little history. You started the last meeting off with a more intense history, but just review that a little bit for us.
Well, I'd be happy to.
Memory.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you for some direction here. If folks will remember, Chapter 172 last year included some requirements for the House and the Senate and the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council to work on a legislative guide that would be in force for the first 5 years of the Legacy Amendment Fund cycle to help guide us in the principles of fund expenditures and the expected outcomes of fund expenditures. For our side, for the House side, we began our work on this effort back in August. We had several committee hearings. The public was encouraged and in some points begged to submit information and feedback and suggestions for our version of the legislative guide. We got feedback from more than 70 individuals and organizations who have been with us in this process through last session, who helped us create and adopt our investment goals back in March of 2009. And we took all of that information, all of those suggestions, and we came up with a first draft of the guide. We held hearings on that. We heard loud and clear that there were concerns about some of the elements of that guide, especially the fact that it was so long. We condensed it. We took out some of the things that were concerns. We added some things that were people's concerns. We had a hearing in January on the second draft of the guide, and last week we met here to consider adoption of the legislative guide. At that time, there was some testimony. We took some suggestions from members and testimony from the public, and we have a revised version of the guide, a draft 3, if you will, of the guide that includes amendments adopted by this group, by this committee last time. And we have, and I will have an amendment that incorporates some of the changes suggested at last committee's hearing as well, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. And we do have a quorum.
Madam Chair, then I will, revise my motion that we adopt draft 3 of the legislative guide dated February 10, which includes the amendments adopted by this committee to draft 2 on February 8. So I'll move adoption of this legislative guide, Madam Chair.
Is there any discussion from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I have a further amendment to draft 3, and I would move that amendment. I guess it's labeled MS/HRD. I believe members have it in their packets, and I would like to explain the amendment and the changes it makes.
Representative Morgan, what does it look like?
It's dated at the top 2/12/2010 at 2:42 p.m. It's a single sheet of paper. My name quite prominently displayed at the top of the page. A little embarrassed of that.
Did you find it? Can you pass that down?
Representative Morgan moves adoption of Amendment MSHRD, February 12th. Any discussion?
Madam Chair,
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think these are great amendments, and I know we've tried to keep kind of expectations consistent across the four funds, and I didn't see that same increase in the percentage of Minnesotans of all ages, ethnicities, abilities, and income that have experienced public arts, culture, and historical investments. And I'm just wondering if you have looked at that in terms of relation to that, because in everything else you kind of echoed it as we go through.
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler. Actually, the motivation behind adding that language, that inclusive language, to the language on the outcomes for the other funds was because we had it was included in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And the suggestion was made, if we're including it there and not including it in other places, what kind of a message does that send? We did not mean to be exclusive in other areas. We think it is important that Minnesotans of all ages, abilities, ethnicities, and income participate in the outcomes of all of these funds. So this puts them into the other funds as well.
Madam Chair, I am corrected. I was just quickly skimming, and I didn't catch it, but it's under the outcomes.
That's where it started. And we also included, because of an inquiry, of the word abilities in there. Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor of the Morgan Amendment MSHRD, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Representative Morgan?
Madam Chair, I would renew my motion to adopt the February 10 draft number 3 of the legislative guide as amended.
Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I was looking through this and studying this, first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Morgan for all the work that he did on this. I'm looking at page 4, the top bullet. I've got a question on what this actually means. Prevention activities may be targeted at endocrine disruptors, pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, biological contaminants such as aquatic invasive species, which may be considered to have degraded lakes, rivers, and streams. What does that do for the farmers that I represent, or what could that do to them? What's the point of that top bullet?
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, thank you for bringing that up. I think that whenever we are actually making legislative decisions, passing appropriations and policy into law, we absolutely have to take a look at how decisions impact everybody involved. To be honest with you, I don't know how legislation specifically on this would impact these other areas. What I do know is that we have heard testimony in this committee that these are some of the biological dangers that we are seeing entering into our lakes and rivers and streams that are affecting habitat for fish and other species that use our waters. So I think this is a guide. It's suggesting that these are some concerns that we need to address. These are some things we need to face. They are affecting our ability to use our lakes, rivers, and streams, and the ability of wildlife to use them as a safe habitat. So I think it's certainly along the lines of the language in the Constitution and things that we need to use as a guide as we move forward.
Well, thank you, Representative Morgan. And Madam Chair, when I chaired the Ag Committee back in the day, we had, I think, 6 hours of hearings on a bill to ban atrazine. And the committee, after a lot of testimony from the EPA and from different federal groups, came down. It's quite a show, actually. I remember the farm groups had a lot of concerns about endocrine disruptors. What would some of those possibly be? And the bill to ban atrazine failed in the Ag Committee 15-0. totaled by, I mean, it was all, both parties. They were concerned about that. And what would we be considering as an endocrine disruptor here?
Representative Guinness.
I think maybe one of the things we want to look at, I mean, you brought up farm chemicals, like assuming that they are, some might be endocrine disruptors. But one of the things that I think we know is that from our wastewater treatment plants, we are getting endocrine disruptors. We also know that plants can treat about maybe 90% of them, but there may be things that plants can do to treat a higher level. And they, since that's a point source, and we're going to have them in our waste streams no matter what, so I would not assume, you may make the assumption it's farm chemicals. I was making the assumption it was wastewater treatment systems. So,
okay. Representative Morgan,
Madam Chair, I was not. I agree. I was not making the assumption that Representative Davids is making here. And again, we are not proposing a ban or a restriction of any particular type or sort on any use of any particular chemical. This is designed as a guide to let folks out there who are coming to us for with recommendations for appropriations from these funds to let them know these are the things that we believe are important. These are the things that we have concerns about when it comes to wildlife and habitat. And these are the things we want you to consider as you make these recommendations to us. So there's no intent here to ban anything or restrict anything. It's just something we believe as a committee we need to be concerned about as we move ahead.
Well,
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. And Representative Murphy, Madam Chair, I would move on page 4 to delete the two words endocrine disruptor and then so it would read prevention activities may be targeted at pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, biological contaminants such as aquatic invasive species, and then leave the rest the same. I would move to delete that.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I would speak against that, and here's why. We have little fishies, little boy fishies that are becoming little girl fishies. And one of the things that as this had, if you were to eliminate endocrine disruptors, you would be saying that our lakes, rivers, and streams may be pretty to look at, but they may not be producing the aquatic life that you would like them to produce. And I think to have healthy lakes, rivers, and streams, it's not just what the eye can see. It's whether our fish and all the other aquatic life is healthy and reproducing. So we're going to have to, the science is very clear. In Lake City, I think it was 73% of the bass in the Mississippi along Lake at Lake City were little boy fish becoming little girl fish, and that's not right. So we do not want to eliminate our ability to have healthy lakes, rivers, and streams, and that's what this would be doing.
Well, Representative Davis.
Madam Chair, if the amendment was passed, we would still be able to look at those little boy fish and girl fish from the many other angles here, biological contaminants. Why wouldn't that cover basically everything? Pharmaceuticals, antibiotics. I just remember from those committee meetings that this is something we probably best stay away from, and I'm not comfortable with it in this language here.
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I wish we weren't trying to make this decision on the fly, I guess, would be one statement I would make. I think, again, this is a guide. We're not attempting to ban anything. The words are may. We didn't use shall or must language in any of this. We want to have as comprehensive as possible a view of what could be making our habitat not a very healthy and supportive habitat for game, fish, and wildlife. And certainly endocrine disruptors, we are seeing some negative impacts on our fish population. I think it's worth keeping in there under the May category, and I appreciate your concerns. I don't think this is advocating for any kinds of bans that you would be concerned about, though.
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry it takes so much time on this, but this is a very important subject to me and the people that I represent down the southeast and across all of ag country. And remembering back to those hearings, it was very clear that they were linking atrazine usage to being in one of those disruptors there. And it says may, but I'll guarantee you they will be going after various farm chemicals. And what I'm concerned about is when the state goes after farm chemicals that the EPA says are just fine, then Minnesota becomes an island because we'll ban this, 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 and this, and there we go. We put our farmers at quite a disadvantage. And the EPA really had no concerns, actually, with the atrazine and the disruptors we're looking at here. So as far as doing this on the fly, when this is passed, which I'm sure will pass, then it goes and sits on some shelf, or where does this go to? This doesn't go to the House floor. It just basically sits as some rules for the committee. Is that correct?
No, and it will go on the web, on our committee website, and then it will go to, we will present it to the Senate as our framework or our legislative guide, and to the Outdoor Heritage Council, because the law 172 says that together we should come up with a legislative guide.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as far as on the fly, I guess at any time this could be brought up and redone, but I feel quite strongly about this, that if this is, those two words are in there, I can't vote for something that I want to vote for. And I know you've got the votes, that's, you can still do it. But I'm really concerned about where this may lead to. So that's just a thought.
Representative Morgan, is endocrine disruptors a new phrase that hasn't been in there from the beginning?
Madam Chair, I'm trying to recall. I don't have the earlier copies of the draft. I think it's been in there before. At the very least, it was. It may have been one of the small changes we added last time. I guess that we approved at the amendment last week.
Representative Wiginius.
Let me tell Representative Davids what one of the prevention activities we funded with the clean water money last time, and that was to provide, I think, don't hold me to this, but I think it was $6 million to buffers along lakes, rivers, and streams. So the prevention activity in question would be, in my mind anyway, are two. One would be buffers along lakes, rivers, and streams, and making sure that we had those. That's a prevention activity. The other thing, prevention activity, that comes to my mind is to upgrade wastewater treatment systems so they can handle where I think the bulk of this might be coming from, and that what I think our civil engineers are going to tell us is they just have to hold wastewater treatment a little longer than they've been holding. I mean, sitting there, because it does take care of itself to some extent if it's held.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And along the lines of what Representative Wiginius just mentioned, allow me to remind you that any expenditures, appropriations, anything moving forward, whether this guide was the source of the recommendation or somebody else came in with some other recommendation of something not included in this guide, those actions would have to be approved by this committee. Those actions would have to move through the legislative process to become law, just like anything else would. This guide is not providing the groundwork for anything that couldn't otherwise be done on that front. It's just trying to communicate to the public what we believe is important to protect habitat for game, fish, and wildlife.
Representative Brown.
I think, being from southern Minnesota, I am concerned about our agriculture as well, and I just want some kind of assurance. And maybe can someone answer the question, what endocrine disruptors are found in wastewater treatment? I need some kind of clarity about what that was if we're not targeting atrazine.
Representative Guinness.
Well, one example would be birth control pills. And they obviously go through people's bodies and end up in wastewater, and we're not going to ban birth control pills. I feel quite confident of that, but I do think because they are in there, we're going to have to take care of our water a little bit better in wastewater treatment system.
Representative Haas.
Thank you. Are we talking about a funding source or a rulemaking source for the prevention of? Because I think if it's a funding source, but this doesn't indicate that, you know, it's a prevention activity rather than
you could say that.
You know, you could change it over to some, I can't wordsmith it right now, but if we're talking about funding, then this could be emphasized that this is the funding process to take care of these concerns rather than a prevention activity.
We could do that.
Madam Chair, could we have our staff over here make a suggestion?
Mr. Shepherd.
Turning that around?
Madam Chair, members, and I don't know if this would address Representative David's concern too, but I think the suggestion would be on that, at the very beginning of that first bullet, before prevention activities, to insert the words funding for, so that it is clear that this is not a regulatory approach, but just it's providing funding for prevention activities.
Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that makes it much worse.
Oh. I'll quit trying.
I mean, thank you for all your help. But
oh, well,
now
you feel better about the first part then, don't you?
Things
Excuse me.
But thank you.
Yeah,
very kind.
Yeah, I was mouthing off and didn't catch what you had to say. Would you please repeat it, Madam Chair?
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I'm at a loss. I think endocrine disruptors, as a general class of compounds, is something that we should be on the watch for. I think it's something that it degrades our lakes, rivers, and streams. I think it's something that degrades habitat for game, fish, and wildlife. I'd hate to send the message by taking it out that we don't care about it. But it's certainly my intent is by no means to place in there any specific regulatory ban or restriction on something that's in a vacuum good for some other important part of Minnesota's economy. I think those debates need to take place in other committees as legislation is attempting to be passed. This isn't legislation. This does not have the force of law. It's a guide, and it was intended for that purpose.
Representative Morgan. Representative Davids is a lead Republican on this committee.
I know.
Representative Davids thinks that this needs a little more work.
Okay.
Obviously, because he has a motion. And I think maybe this needs a little more discussion between us and Representative Davids and anyone else that has concerns about the word endocrine disruptors. Last week on Pharmacy Day at the Hill, I was visited by four young pharmacy students from UMD. And one of the things that we talked about for about 6 minutes, probably, out of 15, was the endocrine disruptors and what's happening to the fish in Minnesota. as a result of human waste and pharmaceutical waste. And it obviously is something that is of concern to Minnesotans across the state and not just in Southwest. And so we need to have a little more discussion. And so I think, Representative Morgan, we're not going to have the final vote today. We're going to have the final vote maybe on Wednesday or after a conversation tonight or tomorrow with Representative Davids and then with anyone else that is in the room that wishes to discuss. And maybe we can have a different way of wording this bullet point.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
Thank you for that consideration. I really appreciate it. As I look at the way that sentence is structured, it looks to me like the endocrine disruptors is a result and the pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, biological contaminants could be a cause. So we've got a result in there and we have several causes in there. So I don't really want to hold this whole thing up because I really appreciate the work Representative Morgan has done. But if we could just remove those two words, I think we could easily pass that out right now because the endocrine disruptors, the endocrines being disrupted is a cause, and it could be if money is spent to study pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, biological contaminants, they may have a result that you have endocrine disruption. I'm just very uncomfortable after 6 hours of hearings, and the two go together, farm chemicals and that as a cause, or a result, I should say.
Well, if you're uncomfortable, we're uncomfortable, and so we want to have more time to think about it and talk about it, and let's talk together.
Thank you, Madam
yep.
Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think your decision is very wise. I look forward to working with Representative Davids. I appreciate the nature of his suggestion and his concern. I think we can work something out that works for everybody concerned. And my comment about on the fly was not meant. It was more tongue in cheek than anything, Representative Davids. I do appreciate your contributions to all this work as well. So. Madam Chair, let's make this work for everybody.
That's right. Representative Kahn, and if we can't finish by Wednesday, we can have next Monday.
Madam Chair, it's not like the Senate is banging down the door with their guns.
No, or the Outdoor Heritage Council.
That's right.
It's not like anybody's really waiting with their arms wide open for us, but we believe in following the law.
That's right.
Yes. Representative Kahn.
Well, I was trying to think of what other word.
Let's not take any more time now. Let's postpone this for a little bit, and then we will come with draft four.
I just wanted to
with proposal for Representative Kahn.
Two words on the table instead of okay. Disruptors to look at the concept of chemical waste. It's more encompassing.
How will your farmers in southeast Minnesota deal with that, Representative?
I, Madam Chair, I believe in the wisdom of the chair that we work on.
Thank you, and if anyone has any other input, please talk with Representative Morgan and Representative Davids and maybe you can set aside a time where we can all talk with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Jim Reinholz made a presentation to Environment Committee on the potential impact, how long it would take to get the authorized trails and parks that are on the law books now into action if we were going at today's pace, I guess, or some other paces. And so we've asked Jim Reinholz to come before the committee and give his presentation to to this committee so we can hear it too, because we want to know how long it's going to take.
Madam Chair.
Jim Reinholtz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Jim Reinholtz, fiscal analyst for the House of Representatives. You should have in your packet two spreadsheets that I, as the chair indicated, I put together and made a presentation for the Environment Finance Committee, and I was asked to come here and also to explain the same information. I'll start with the sheet entitled at the top, DNR Parks, Deferred Maintenance and Completion. And I'm showing several things on this spreadsheet. They were trying to respond to questions and provide information that the Environment Finance Committee had requested of me. And so I'll begin with the first section of the spreadsheet is titled Deferred Maintenance. That question came up in committee as they were considering the bonding requests of the department. And what I've done here is put together a scenario, really, that would show one way to get rid of the real backlog deferred maintenance in state trail system. And I'll just quickly go through the conclusion or what I'm showing here is, if you look over in the state trail system, there's currently authorized in law 2,597 miles of trail. Currently only 1,266, approximately 50% of that authorized miles is actually open. On those open trails, the 1,266, the DNR estimates that currently $32 million worth of outstanding deferred maintenance needs. Now, they have given us a detailed list of that could be supplied to any members on the committee that would be interested in it. What I'm showing here is you look, if we continued funding for this deferred maintenance backlog with legacy dollars at the level that are appropriated previously for 10 and 11, which are indicated there in 11 at $3,321,000, if the House and the Senate, the legislature wanted to get rid of that $32 million worth of backlog, you know, in some sort of a relatively short time, it would take continuing that funding at that $3,321,000 a year legacy funding and adding bonding at a level of $6 million in 2010, 2012, and $3 million in 2014. And that would result in the deferred trail backlog being at least authorized in funding and completed in the year 2014. That was one question. The next question, and the chair, you brought that up. What would it cost to complete the authorized trails? As I said earlier, there's only about 50% of the trails that have been authorized are actually open right now, and using DNR estimates of costing $346,000 per mile of trail to acquire, develop, and open it, it would take $460 million. That's the number shown there on the spreadsheet to actually purchased and completely and develop those remaining trails. The rest of it is the numbers. What I did was try to come up with a scenario that would fund those trails at what was perhaps money that would be reasonable for the bonding committee to provide. And what I'm indicating there is starting in 2010. If the $20 million was appropriated each bonding cycle every other year, and if legacy dollars were directed towards completing these trails at really at the base level that was up above and is currently there in 2011, how long would it take to open up those remaining miles of trails that are already authorized? And as you can see, it's a long time. That goes out to 2044. It would take at that a rather high level, $20 million worth of bonding a year before we would get all those currently authorized trails open. The third part of this spreadsheet indicates what would happen to operation and maintenance costs if we were to actually complete and open those trails. DNR estimates about $8,000 a mile worth of increased operating costs once a trail is open. what I've got here really in 2010 is the current level of operating and maintenance in the DNR for state trails. And all I'm doing is indicating as it went out, if we completed the trails at the same schedule as I just showed you on the section in the middle, what would we have to add to operating costs? And as you can see, over a cumulative additional annual funds needed, as you get out to like the 2044, it would be like $10 million a year more in operating costs. So they're interrelated. As we open more trails, we'd have to continue to increase funding to the DNR. This really came out in the committee. It was to give the committee background so they could make some informed decisions on how much bonding to recommend to the capital investment committee be put forward for DNR deferred maintenance, also for open acquiring and developing current trails, and then what kind of commitment the state would be making for maintenance. And as you can see, considerable commitment would be made. The other point that I made to the committee when I presented it was perhaps the committee should either themselves or through some study direct someone to maybe come up with some priority system, especially on the trails, on where the state does need trails. And since funding is going to take a long time to complete those, the state should be, the legislature really should be looking at some defined priorities on how those dollars would be allocated around. That's really the presentation. If anyone would have any questions, Madam Chair or members, on that spreadsheet, I would answer those now. Others, I'd like to move on to the state parks.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Reinholds, have you had a couple questions. Have you had a chance to look at the governor's proposed budget cuts and how that affects your numbers here? I guess that's one question.
Mr. Reinholds.
Madam Chair, the operating budget, no, we haven't seen the detail that would indicate how this affected state trails. I have a number for the DNR, but I do not have any details below that total DNR number on operating costs in the governor's recommendations that came out today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, again, Mr. Reinholds, that several million, $100 million, could I have that figure one more time?
Madam Chair, I think the figure you are probably referring to is how much money would it cost to open up all the currently authorized trails. You'll
including
see that there.
The Proctor one and the Hermantown one.
Specific. You see there's a column titled Outstanding Funding Needs. If you go down to the middle where it says Complete Currently Authorized Trails, that number is $460,526,000, a rather staggering amount. And that would be to acquire and open those trails that are already authorized in law. No new trails added as authorizations.
No connectors.
No connectors. And there is, and frankly, no inflation factored in either, which would, since that went out to 2044, would become a huge factor also.
But that's past the 25 years.
Madam Chair, I did have that in the notes, that this is past the ending of the legacy amount, but I was keeping it at the base just for demonstration purposes.
And it's more than Parks and Trails together are estimated to take in.
Madam Chair, most of the new dollars on here was bonding dollars.
Yeah, but there would be some. Well, so all the trails that are authorized take up 2044 and $460 million.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
We've got a lot of work to do. Go on to the parks.
Madam Chair, members, there's a second spreadsheet that's titled DNR Parks, Deferred Maintenance and In-Holding Acquisition. It's very structured very similar to the trails ones, the trails chart. And the difference here, if you look, the first section of the chart here is deferred maintenance. And DNR has indicated that deferred maintenance is approximately $100 million right now at the end of 2009. We do have a detailed list of that also. Obviously, a little bit rounded, I believe, at that $100 million. Okay. The same question came up. What's a reasonable funding approach to eliminate that deferred maintenance? And in this instance, currently the legacy dollars have been appropriated at $2 million a year towards deferred maintenance in state parks. So I'm running that as a base amount all the way out to 2023. It came up with the suggested amount of bonding cycle of $10 million in bonding every 2 years. That then would make that $100 million go away in the year 2023. So it would take a considerable increase in what we're currently spending on deferred maintenance for parks. It would take all the way out to 2023 to eliminate that $100 million worth of deferred maintenance. A relatively large investment at long period of time. The second portion of the spreadsheet is what would it cost to acquire those acres that are already authorized within the boundaries of the state park system? Each time a state park is authorized in law, boundaries are laid out in the law. Currently, there are 42,000 acres within those authorized boundaries that the state does not own. What I was asked to and what I laid out here was a scenario on what it would cost with some sort of perhaps reasonable or obtainable amount of funding for acquisition through bonding and other sources. This one, Madam Chair, I came up with an average of $14,000 an acre based on some DNR requests and purchases in the past. Obviously, the price of an acre of land throughout the state can vary drastically, but this was based on that $14,000 was based on a number of requests and sales, actual sales. So, I think on this large of a acreage, it's probably accurate. 42,000 acres times $14,000 per acre is about $588 million. If that was the average amount used in order to buy all those acres that are currently within the boundaries of state park but not owned by the state, it would be approximately $588 million. What I tried to lay out was what might be an obtainable amount of money to, and frankly, I mean, that could change. I said $7 million. What would happen if we did $7 million of bonding just for acquisition? How long would it take to get rid of that 588? As the chart shows, it would take out to the year 2139. Quite a long period of time before we would be able to purchase all those acres that are currently authorized in the system. I'm not certain that laying this out is guaranteeing that the state will buy those. I don't think. Perhaps it's maybe something that the committee should think about and direct at some point whether or not we need to add state park acres, whether we need to look at what should be within the boundaries and what isn't a reasonable amount to buy. The other piece at the last bottom of this is really, I'm just showing what is the current level of operating and maintenance within the state park system. I didn't project that outward because that varies so greatly depending on what the system would do with those acres. I was assuming most of those acres, if they were purchased, would probably just be undeveloped, and I wasn't trying to make any projections there. Wasn't really asked of me by the committee that information. They were more focused on the deferred maintenance and acquisition and development of currently authorized parts of the system. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions you or members of the committee have.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Reinholtz. One of my favorite questions. Now, does this include state recreation areas?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, yes, it does.
Good. Just, Madam Chair.
You won one.
Yeah. That was easier than last week. Just one follow-up quickly then. So just so that I have it straight, you're saying that together $17 million abonding cycle and bonding and $3 million legacy?
That, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, yes, that would, it's $3 million legacy, $2 million a legacy for parks and only one, and then $1 million out of environmental trust, not all legacy, that, and then $7 million in the bonding, $10 million for a period of time for the deferred maintenance, yes, as laid out here, would be necessary in order to, in a way, complete the system as authorized. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Reynolds?
Representative?
Madam Chair. Mr. Reynolds.
Don't demote
it. I'm sorry. So you're saying there's lots of parks that have private land owners within the park boundaries?
Madam Chair, that's correct. That there's 42,000, approximately 42,000 acres within the park system boundaries that are privately, that are not owned by the state at this point.
I didn't know that. I just thought it was Jay Cook. Okay. 42,000. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, to Mr. Reinholtz. First, on the parks page, that figure of 100 million, I guess it is, for the deferred maintenance, can you describe a little more just how the DNR came up with that number?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, there is a list on it. It includes primarily upgrading on buildings, parking lots, and structures. There's also some numbers that you'll hear sometimes for the resource itself. This is really the facilities within the park system. They have standards that they believe the building should be at, and then they use those to develop this listing of what they call deferred maintenance need. I think that, and I have asked them that, they probably should work a little bit at defining these needs a little bit better. That I think deferred maintenance probably would be better referred to as rehabilitation rather than maintenance. Maintenance brings forth the idea of things like replacing broken glass. That's not what capital dollars should be used for, but rehab of buildings is more accurate.
Yeah, Thank you. Follow-up, Madam
sure.
Chair. Yeah, thank you for that answer. The number just seems surprisingly round. That was
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, I did say that it was a very rounded number, and I do have a list of those things. I'm guessing that you could probably go well beyond that if they wanted to, and it was generated primarily by the DNR.
And just one more follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Under the acquiring inholdings for these state parks, you say it'll take till 2139 based on your chart to use bonding dollars to acquire these inholdings. How much longer would it take to actually pay for them?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, I think that capital investment committee probably could answer that. We put bonding out usually on 10 years, so I mean it would constantly be paying for those with significant amounts, but we don't bond. The bonds, I believe, are typically let for this kind of project on a 10-year basis.
Thank you.
So it would go to 2149.
Madam Chair, that'd be correct.
Thanks so much. Oh, Representative Haas has a question.
Thank you. In addition to, Mr. Reynolds, in addition to the purchasing of park lands as we go forth, does the state also use the tool of the purchase of development rights for lands?
Mr. Reynolds.
Madam Chair, Representative Haas, in state parks, I do not believe that we've used that.
And
usually fee purchase. I believe it's all fee purchase.
Madam Chair,
Haas.
That may be something, especially in development areas that are developing rapidly, might be something that we should be considering at the state level. In areas that are not developing at a rapid rate, there isn't much difference between the purchase of the land and the purchase of the development rights. If Mr. Representative Erdahl gets to point out his favorite item, then I also would like to do the same. When we talk about county and city regional trails in lieu of state trails for recreational areas and county and city regional parks in lieu of the state parks or metro parks, you can see where these would be quite a savings because they're matched when there's a purchase. There's a matching process when there's a purchase. And also traditionally on those types of parks and trails, the deferred or rehab of the maintenance of the trail is paid by the county and city and not by the state. So that's something that I like to keep bringing up because they're a really good deal. And that's how the state map gets to be a red, blue, and white. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Guinness.
Thank you. I think one shouldn't assume just because we see these numbers that we are going to go ahead and do things the way we've always done in the past, because what these numbers are telling us is we can't do things the way we've always done them in the past, and that's what the reason we asked for them to be done. This is the beginning of the conversation about perhaps changing the way we do business. But one of the things that I was running into in the environment finance was the assumption that with the new money, there was plenty of money to do everything that anybody wanted to do. And I think Mr. Reinholz has pointed out quite well that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And
significant zeros are really hard. In the
so buy anything with.
So I think this is just a good reality check that yep. will make us think about different ways of doing business, and some areas are already thinking about different ways of doing business in developing trails, because it what it looks like from my point of view is that it's the acquisition and development that is the hard part, and that locals may be better at doing that. So lots of room for discussion here is what I at least in our committee, that's what we're talking about. Does that make sense to you?
Madam Chair, thank you.
Haas.
An awful lot of sense to me. Thank you.
Mr. Reinholz, you've been very enlightening to us tonight.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to come to your committee.
Yes, we're happy to have you. We will go forth with these numbers and see what we can dream. Thank you very much. Item 4 on the agenda is reports on the use of arts and cultural heritage funds. The first segment deals with how the arts and cultural heritage funds have been used so far. The organizations on the agendas had reports due January 15th. And the first report is from Sam Maida at the Lake Superior Zoo. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sam Maida. I'm the Executive Director of Lake Superior Zoological Society. And I want to thank you for the funding, and I also want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here for just a couple minutes. I won't go over all the stuff that's in the report because you have that in your packet. I wanted to let you know that the Lake Superior Zoological Society, a nonprofit, took over the operation of the zoo from the city of Duluth a year ago. And since that time, we've been working towards getting accredited again. We lost accreditation in 2006. This past year, we were bogged down in the organizational changes and taking care of business. These funds came along, and they were a catalyst. It got us back on the track of working towards accreditation projects. It was critical timing for us, perfect timing for us. The projects that are in there, they all have to do with accreditation concerns that we have. The master plan is about the future. It's a framework for decision-making. The exhibit restoration, we're planning a new wolf exhibit for the summer. The zoo science project, conservation theme, we kind of borrowed the idea from the Minnesota Zoo. Thank you very much. And the zoo history project, of course, is about asset preservation, the history of the zoo, the culture of the area. We have a number of WPA projects that are in need of repairs and are on the AZA concern list. So these funds have helped us move forward. We use them as leverage for additional funds. And without these funds, I doubt very much if we would be as far advanced in our march toward accreditation as we are right now. Our goal is to seek accreditation in 2011, 2012 at the latest. I just want to thank you. We look at this as an investment in the future. It addresses all of the important, or some of the important values, preservation, history, conservation, and education. These are important to us and important, I think, to most Minnesotans. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Any questions, Mr. Maida?
Thank you.
So things are happening at the Lake Superior Zoo. And
moving fast.
Is it Arrowhead Zoological Society, or is it Lake Superior Zoological Society, or what?
It's both. It's actually the Arrowhead Zoological Society Incorporated doing business as the Lake Superior Zoological Society. We're registered in both names.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I am particularly happy for the letters because they give me a couple of other things to quote, should those be necessary.
Great. We're always happy to help you quote. Very good.
Thank you very much. Your friend also.
Thank you so much. Peggy Adelman, Minnesota Zoo.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Adelman, Chief Financial Officer of the Minnesota Zoo. Thank you for this opportunity to give you an update on the legacy funds that we received. We entered into an agreement with the Department of Administration for the funding at the end of October. And in the current fiscal year, our plans for program development are for a black bear exhibit that is going to be at the end of the Minnesota Trail. You may recall that a couple of years ago, we really refreshed the Minnesota Trail. But one of the things that we've not had there, and despite the success of the grizzly bear exhibit, people in Minnesota want to see Minnesota black bears. And so what these funds are doing are twofold. One is just the kind of preliminary. We have the conceptual design for the exhibit, which would be at the end of the trail. These funds will help us actually put together plans that we can then go out and try and do some fundraising sometime this coming summer. The other piece that is very exciting is really the program piece and the story that we tell at the exhibits. And if you've been to the Minnesota Trail and the wolf part of the exhibit, where we've got real people's faces and quotes from those people and the impact of wolves, and we want to do that same thing. We're partnering with someone that we found who is a cultural black bear expert. We are also partnering with the Department of Natural Resource on the biological pieces, but really looking at some of the exciting ways that the black bear has influenced Minnesota, both with the native cultures here and also the fur trade. And so we're in the process of working with those partners and putting together what I think will be a very exciting story connecting the black bear and what the black bear means to Minnesota. We also received funding for next fiscal year, so I'll be back here in a year reporting on that. And just briefly, what we'll be looking at there is distance learning and piloting some programs that we can then take on those Minnesota animals and Minnesota Trail through distance learning technology into some of the greater Minnesota schools.
Sounds exciting. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Michelle Furr, Como Zoo and Conservatory, Campus Director.
I'm a visual person, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, so I have a little PowerPoint, but I'll be brief. And I've got a helper here who's letting us use the system today. Thank you. Again, my name is Michelle Fred. I'm the campus manager for Como Park Zoo and Conservatory. Como Park Zoo and Conservatory is an urban oasis in the heart of Minnesota. The Zoo and Conservatory is one of the number one family cultural attractions in the state, attracting more than 2 million visitors each year. Como is also rich in history, and it has a 100-year history of being one of the state's greatest assets. Como strives to be an inspiring place that teaches children compassion and care for animals, plants, and the planet Earth. It feeds people's spirits, their needs for time together as a family, and their connection to the community, nature, and the world.
Oh, look.
Como Zoo is utilizing the Legacy Amendment Arts and Culture Heritage Funds for 4 initiatives, which would otherwise not be possible if offered to our guests as part of the zoo's base funding. These initiatives include educational and interpretive signage, a brand new animal show, temporary art exhibits, and a seasonal butterfly exhibit. Along with these objectives, we wanted to meet all the constitutional amendment investment goals set forth by this committee, along with being able to share how the funds and projects were funded as part of the amendment. As a core to Como's mission on education, updating the aging interpretive signage and adding interactive and technology-based interpretive and hands-on experiences is important to us. Here's our current primate building. You can see that it is a dark area with lots of brick and mortar. And if you see right above the little girl in pink, she's looking up at signage that's very, very small. The education and interactive displays will use the latest technology to present engaging presentations to increase the interest and awareness and knowledge in viewers of all ages. Como Zoo will focus on 2 animal areas at the campus to update, the primate building and our aquatics building. We're also being able to leverage these plans that you're seeing here with some funding that we got from our nonprofit partner, Como Friends, which will also give us leverage to increase our adding some sound absorbing panels, some enhancements into our lighting, and some more interactives. While the primary emphasis will be to enhance the existing rapport between the viewers and animal exhibits, there's a distinct opportunity to present information of the educational nature that helps the public better understand the animals, their physical characteristics, their needs, global region of where they origin, and the ongoing conservation efforts. You can kind of see some of the plans that we were developing. These items will come online for the primate building this spring, and our aquatics buildings will be updated next fall. One of the core missions on connecting people with Como's animals, plants, and the gardens that foster appreciation, conservation, and preservation is one of our core values. One way we were able to make these connections is through interactive opportunities such as our current offerings of Sparky the Sea Lion, our Keeper Talks, and our Gardener Talks, and our Story Time. Utilizing the Legacy Amendment Arts and Cultural Heritage Funds, we are in the process of developing and producing a brand new creature feature show which will debut this spring and run through the summer, giving our guests another opportunity to get closer to the animals. While Como is a natural setting for arts and living exhibits, it also houses many works of art and is a backdrop for many artists. The space we have here in our gallery gives us the opportunity to show some art exhibits throughout different times of the year, but it doesn't leverage us to help produce those shows from some of the emerging artists that we work with in our art programs, as well as bringing in some traveling exhibits. There's some great topics of plants and animals that would add to curriculums for school groups that we touch. So using the funds, we plan on developing 3 different art exhibits in our off-season so we can drive attendance in some of those quiet months, as well as to give opportunities for education to some of the schools. Como Zoo introduced blooming butterflies as part of a 2-year grant in 2008 and from our nonprofit partner, Como Friends. Without the Legacy Amendment funds, Como would close the doors to this very popular exhibit for good. Blooming butterflies offer visitors an experience, a total immersion experience, and they can get up close to the butterflies, our staff, our keepers, our interns, and our volunteers. We plan to bring this back by popular demand by the funds of the Legacy Amendment for 2010. This exhibit also gives us the opportunity to bring in local college students as interns in the background of science, zoology, and horticulture. So all of these projects we're working on for this year and the fall of 2010. We started working in the fall of 2009. We'll bring online this year in 2011, and none of it would be possible without the funds of the Legacy Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Very good.
super quick, sorry.
That's very good.
Thank you.
Questions? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to congratulate you on your evaluation plan that you have here in your packet on page 9, I think it is. I think this is a great setup with the different areas of the projects and the evaluation tools you'll use to determine whether or not you meet your goals. So I think this is that's very impressive. Thank you for doing that.
Anything else? Thank you so much. The Association of Minnesota Public Education Radio Stations. Welcome, Todd Melby.
Actually, it's going to be Todd Melby, and thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joel Glazer. I'm the Executive Director of AMPERS, joined by Todd Melby.
Okay. Joel what?
Joel Glazer, G-L-A-S-E-R, and I am the Executive Director. And bear with me, I apologize. We need to switch over since we allowed the zoo to utilize
it. Are you going to be just as quick?
Yes, we are.
All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us today, and thank you for the funding, which has allowed us to significantly increase the amount of quality arts and cultural heritage programming. AMPERS, as you know, is made up of 12 independent community public radio stations. It's the second largest public radio network in Minnesota, behind Minnesota Public Radio and not owned by Minnesota Public Radio. The stations entered into a grant agreement with the Department of Administration last fall and received their first legacy payments back in October. The AMPER stations have always been committed to enhancing the arts and cultural heritage in Minnesota, but the additional funding has allowed us to take that commitment to the next level. We prepared a very brief multimedia, very brief promise, example of exactly what that looks like.
Since 2009, AMPER's public radio stations have been airing dozens of stories, documentaries, interviews, and concerts about Minnesota's rich artistic and cultural heritage. This is a sample of some of those shows. From KMOJ in Minneapolis-St. Paul, the history of R&B in Minnesota.
It's the history of R&B in Minnesota. It's the history of R&B in Minnesota, Minnesota, Minnesota.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mitch Faulkner. And
from KVSC in St. Cloud, Arts and Culture Collage.
Welcome to the Arts and Culture Collage, a place to post happenings of all things artistic and cultural covering central Minnesota. School District 742 presents the Night of the Stars. Right.
From KSRQ in Thief River Falls, the Saturday Morning Barn Dance with Carl and the Country Dutchman.
My capital art.
That's your art.
From KUMD in Duluth, Radio Gallery.
Welcome to Radio Gallery, a show about ideas, people, and artists in Minnesota. I'm Maya Morton.
From KBM in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Jazz Originals with Butch Thompson. From Radio K in Minneapolis, Culture Q.
The British Television Advertising Awards will be screened at the Walker until January 2nd. For Radio K, I'm Ryan Wilson.
From KAXE in Grand Rapids, Ojibwe Moen, an Ojibwe language show.
Ani gin ani nishinakazoyan.
Which comes the indigenous cause?
Andi ain dyan.
Gamasquawakokog, Minowabamajigamog, Inda.
Support for these shows comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, while most of the AMPERS programs are hyper-local, some have statewide appeal. We have always struggled with an efficient and effective way to share those programs. Our legacy funds have helped us to establish an infrastructure to easily share these programs. We went live with this new system at the beginning of this month, and just 15 days later, I'm proud to inform you that we have distributed more than 60 programs. We have created partnerships with the Itasca County Historical Society, the Lax Indian Museum, the Bemidji Community Art Center, and the Belle County Historical Society, just to name a few. Many more meetings have taken place and additional partnerships have grown. And finally, perhaps our largest endeavor is to archive programs produced with these funds and make them available to future needs. The funds have helped us to create fantastic new educational, artistic, and cultural historical programs, and we have even more ahead. Now Mr. Melvin will focus his attention on creating a website that will provide Minnesotans with easy access to all these programs on demand. Again, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for providing the funds, which are allowing us to provide even more quality programs for the citizens of Minnesota.
Sounds good. Mr. Melvin?
Yeah, the only thing I would add, just in the interest of time, is that there were some things that we weren't able to include in the video that you saw, and those include from the WTIP in Grand Marais, they had a Radio Waves Musical Festival. KUMD in Duluth has been airing a show called Live from Studio A for the past 6 months, and that includes musical artists from throughout the state appearing live in their studio. And also, KMSU in Mankato has been recording the concerts of the Mankato Symphony Orchestra since 2009, and they'll continue to do that, and they're also airing Latino radio dramas. So there's just a wide variety of rich cultural content that our stations are airing.
So do you have any idea if your listenership is up?
Unfortunately, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that's something that is gauged through Arbitron, which, depending on the area, only comes out at four times a year at most, in many cases twice a year, and in some cases it does not come out at all. So at this point we do not have any indication, but later on we will be able to take a look at those numbers.
And is this website something new, Mr. Melby?
Yes, it is.
So will we be able to tell from maybe how many hits each
gets?
Yes. And that kind of thing? And how many, is it called, how many people try to get it on call, you know, they, through their computer, a program?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. We'll be using all the latest measurable outcomes that there are available on the internet, and that would include downloads and streaming, et cetera.
Hmm. Representative Hausman.
And Madam Chair, just in case you didn't have time to follow along and read everything, I thought you should know that Culture Q, a 30-minute program that's positively oozing cool.
I'll have to stream that.
Oozing cool.
Is that what you do? You stream? I got a shuffle for Christmas, so I'm excited now. I haven't used it yet, but I'm going to. I like that ooze cool. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Minnesota Public Radio. Welcome, Jeff Nelson. Welcome, Lisa Radzak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this mic working?
If you talk louder.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lisa Radzak. I am the Manager of Community Engagement at Minnesota Public Radio. I am joined today by Jeff Nelson, who is Minnesota Public Radio's Director of Public Strategy. As you all are aware, as Minnesota's largest cultural organization, MPR broadcast signal is available in 95% of the population of the state. Every week, more than 90,000 people tune in to MPR's three regional services, news, classical, and the current. As such, we appreciate the chance to share with you all the ways Minnesota Public Radio is following through on your vision for the Legacy Amendment. In particular, I'm personally very proud of the ways we are providing access to arts education and to education about Minnesota's cultural heritage. With that, I want to turn it over to Jeff to do a brief overview of the numerous projects we are launching with our share of arts and cultural heritage funding.
Mr. Nelson, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Nelson. I'm the Managing Director of Public Strategy.
at Minnesota Public Radio, and not to correct my brand new colleague Lisa Radzik, but it's 900,000 listeners. I said 90.
Oh boy.
900,000.
Oh, what's a zero, friends?
But it is definitely a pleasure to be here. And before we say anything else, of course, we want to say thank you for the funding that you've entrusted with Minnesota Public Radio and with public broadcasters throughout the state. We're very proud of the work we're doing. We're proud of the work AMPRS and public television will be presenting to you. As you know, $1.15 million in legacy amendment funds were appropriated to Minnesota Public Radio for fiscal year 2010 to create new programming and events, expand regional news service, amplify Minnesota culture to a regional and national audience, and document Minnesota's history through the Minnesota Audio Archives. We brought a paper and sort of distributed to all of you sort of our proposal for how to use these funds. It was no big surprise that we did not get the full amount that we asked for, obviously, but we are proud to say today that we are trying to make all of the projects that we presented to you 10 months ago a reality today. So just very quickly, I will go through each of these projects and give you a highlight of what these programs that are providing nearly every Minnesotan access to information, knowledge, and broadcasts of Minnesota's arts, history, and cultural heritage. Some of these you probably expect. One of the things that we've been able to do is to expand and strengthen our broadcasts of Minnesota arts organizations to Minnesotans. So we're able to partner with the organizations you see on the screen, the Chamber Orchestra, the Minnesota Orchestra, Contus, Minnesota Opera, in order to provide access to these arts events. You've heard it before, but one of the wonderful things about public broadcasting is that you might have 1,000 people who get to attend a concert in person, and a lot of people, for many reasons, aren't able to attend. What we're able to do is to provide almost every Minnesotan free access to that concert. So you might have 1,000 people in the room, but if we broadcast the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra on Monday night, over 7,000 people will tune in Minnesota. If we get that out internationally, and often we are able to push St. Paul Chamber Orchestra concerts out internationally, as many as 7 million people might listen to that concert. And so we're really here to, we're in the business of providing access to arts, history, and cultural heritage content. This is something you might not expect. We are launching a project in a couple of months called Play It Forward. This is to use our classical music service primarily, but all of our music services, to do a statewide musical instrument drive. So you'll be hearing on the air a call to donate your musical instrument, any instrument that might be languishing in your attic. And then we're working with the public schools to get those instruments. We're going to refurbish them and get those instruments into the hands of kids that might not have access to these instruments in the first place. We're partnering with the Minnesota Music Educators Association, with the Minnesota Association for School Administrators, and the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. And we're hoping to get as much as $100,000 worth of instruments donated to those schools. Minnesota Today. Minnesota Today is going to be a brand new service for Minnesota Public Radio. It is going to be your one-stop shop for what's happening everywhere in Minnesota. So what we're doing is creating content-sharing partnerships with primarily local newspapers throughout the state who will provide us free access to their content, and we'll provide them free access to theirs. You'll be able to go to our website and look and find out what's happening in the news anywhere in the state. And then if you pick up that local paper, you're going to find articles written by Minnesota Public Radio reporters. It is absolutely free, and legacy funding is helping us create the content sharing partnerships that drive Minnesota Today. Also, Minnesota Today is going to be the place you can go to find out what's happening in arts, culture, and entertainment anywhere in the state. We're going to have, and I hope we're not being too grandiose, the best arts and cultural calendar in the state on Minnesota Today. So you can go there and find out what's happening everywhere. And we think this will be a very exciting addition to NPR's regional service. Now, everything that's in Minnesota Today and all of our services will be fed into the Minnesota Audio Archives. We're partnering with the Historical Society, with the libraries, with the University of Minnesota to make sure that all of the content that we have that's in our basement is digitized and made available to the public, and then everything moving forward. So everything that you're going to see in Minnesota Today and everything on our three regional services that can be archived will be archived and made available. This is a huge project. It's one of these things you think, well, you know, how easy, you just go downstairs and digitize it and make it available. It's much more complicated, and we're very thankful to the Historical Society and other partners that are helping us pull this off. But we know that there's 40 years of fantastic historical content that we need to make available to everyone, and we're making that happen right now. New national programming. This is something that we heard loud and clear from the legislature during the last session, which is they are very proud of the work that originates in Minnesota for a national audience. And so, while again, this is something that takes a long time to pull off, we are currently piloting new national programs that will be based in Minnesota, create jobs in Minnesota, and will reach millions of people throughout the state. NPR's current national program programming reaches over 16 million people. So we're looking at something that will have a huge impact. And again, people just over and over will hear, no matter where they are in the country, this is coming to you from Minnesota, and it's something that we're very proud of. Something we've never done before. We have our first artists in residence, the Parker Quartet. And they are currently sort of touring the state. They're in Bemidji, Duluth, Rochester, the Twin Cities. They're doing master classes. If you've not had a chance to go online, just Google Parker Quartet. There are several of their performances that we've hosted that are available on YouTube. An absolutely phenomenal international quality quartet, and they are our artist in residence for the year, something we never could have done without legacy funding. The Fitzgerald Theater. As you know, we own a theater down the street, and one of the things that Legacy is helping us do is present new arts and cultural events based at the Fitzgerald Theater, including Poetry Out Loud, which is the local manifestation of a national poetry contest for high school kids, WIT, which is a new four-part author series, and also we'll be hosting the United States Army Field Band, which is something that we're very proud to do at the Fitzgerald Theater. We're also able to extend the reach of The Current. One of the things, one of the great things about my job is I get to go around the state and talk to NPR listeners. And the one thing I hear from so many of them is, when is The Current coming to my town? For those of you that might not be familiar with The Current, it's our new music station, something that's very popular with a younger demographic, and something that we think is very important for sustaining NPR's growth and success into the future. Thanks to legacy funding, we now are able to offer The Current as a digital broadcast in the St. Cloud area. We've also created something called the Legacy Innovation Fund, and I'm proud to announce today that we've made our first three grants to innovative new projects within NPR. These aren't huge projects, but they're projects that hopefully will grow to have a substantial impact. One is State of the Arts with Marianne Combs. This is a statewide blog, primarily, where Marianne tracks what's happening throughout the arts community and really directs your attention to the latest and greatest in arts and culture throughout the state. We're also helping fund Art Hounds, which is a fantastic program. Some of you may have heard pilots of it already. Art Hounds takes three artists and asks them to put away, don't talk about their art, but to talk about the art that inspires them. And it's a really powerful program. Something that I know at the last one, this woman was crying talking about the fantastic work someone else was doing and directing our listeners to get involved, not in their art, but in the art that they love. And The Current Presents, this is another fantastic experiment. It's a way where we're investing a very small amount of money, but creating brand new radio shows every week. Every Sunday, The Current creates a new radio show using legacy funds. And one of these, or two of these, or maybe three, will eventually grow into the next big radio show on The Current. So that's it, 11 projects. Each of these projects represents hundreds of individual programs, and each of these programs hopefully will improve the lives of the, again, 900,000 plus listeners we have in the region. And Lisa and I are here to answer any questions.
Well, we hope that the 900,000 will grow.
And actually, it has. The new Arbitron ratings came out a few weeks ago, and we're up to 950,000. We're hoping to break 1 million soon. And that's weekly listeners.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. I one of the big things for me in the process was that the public would know what we're doing, and that's kind of what these hearings are about. But I just really want to thank you for doing the logo that you have and kind of including that in everything. And hopefully, I don't know where our logo development is on these projects, but I think, did we kind of pass it to the DNR or something? I'm not sure where that finally ended up, but with the final passage. But thank you for including that in your projects, and hopefully, I mean, that's wonderful. It's clean and simple, and I kind of envisioned something maybe more with a Minnesota kind of theme, but that is wonderful. So, but thank you for doing it, and I think that's kind of a testament, or I think it's powerful. So hopefully others are considering including that till we figure out a kind of a logo for all, but thank you for doing that.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Nelson. I think a lot of these programs are really exciting, and I'm one of those 900,000 vote listeners to a variety of different things, but I would ask you to think a little bit about really increasing the opportunity for Minnesota-based content. I see that the poetry contest for students is a national one, and that the four-part author series is for national authors. And one of the things I hear from people in our community is that they believe some of our major institutions have almost sort of like, we just can't, we got that Lake Wobegon, we're not quite good enough sort of sense, and we always look outside for the artists and the talents and the stories that we feature. And I think we've got some really wonderful books. I could suggest some written by living Minnesota authors who would love to have the chance to be featured. And I know that every high school poet in Minnesota would love to be on that program and not have to compete with those from 49 other states. So just think about that, because I really do think that builds that Minnesota pride and ownership. And I think the more that you focus towards Minnesota, the more you're going to have fun discovering what we have.
Any other advice? Go forth and continue to do good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And who's cool? Oh,
this Department of Administration, the legacy, the funding to the previous speakers' organizations were distributed through the Department of Administration. And we will, Ms. Madigan is the Director of Financial Management, and she's got a short presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lenora Madigan, Department of Administration, and I'm the Financial Management Director, as the Chair said. I'm just going to quickly overview our work with the grantees who receive legacy funds through the Department of Administration. Alyssa Hagen is our grants specialist, and she was unable to be here tonight. She works directly with all the grantees. She had a class at Metro State, and her professor wouldn't allow her to miss, so I'm a stand-in for her.
Thank you.
We began working with the grantees right after session last year on their work plans and budgets and helping them to understand what we would be looking for in a grant agreement. We also worked with AMPERS and Minnesota Public Television Association on the individual amounts that each station would be receiving. Over the next couple of months, as we were working with the grantees, we developed grant agreements that would cover the two-year period, so the biennium, and delivered those grant agreements to all the grantees in mid-October. And by mid-November, all of the grant agreements, with the exception of one, which was the Como Zoo, and it needed to go through some more formal processes, were executed. So in October and November, we began making first quarter grant payments and continued making second quarter grant payments, and we were very pleased with the work that the grantees were doing. And they all completed their reports that were due, and they're all published out there on the Legislative Coordinating Commission's website, and I understand you have copies in your packet as well. We try to communicate openly with the grantees so that they have any information they need, and Alyssa is available to them. of the appropriation, we've already put out about 68% of the funds to the grantees for them to begin their work, and we're in the process of making third quarter payments right now to the grantees that have requested them. So that highlights our work that the Department of Administration has done. If you'd have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
And when will the other 32% be distributed out?
We have a grant payment schedule. The third quarter grant payments are due and are available after February 1st as the grantees ask for them. We've made many of them already. And then fourth quarter payments are made available in April. So as the grantees ask for them, they'll be distributed.
So by June, there won't be anything left.
That would be correct.
Okay. Questions? Thank you very much.
You bet.
The Historical Society is a very forgiving agency. And Mr. Fox, would you mind?
Sorry.
I said the Historical Society is a very forgiving agency. And I think that based on past experience with the Historical Society, that they are a very fluid agency, and that Miss Mack hasn't had any time at all day, and we have to be back on the floor at 6:30. And so, would you mind coming on Wednesday?
We look forward to seeing you at 8:30 on Wednesday morning.
Thank you. And if they change our schedule any more this week, it could be 8:15. On Wednesday.
We'll be there.
All right.
I'll see you at 8:30.
We all have their buttons on.
Thank you very much.
It was representative that said that you wanted to have a snack.
I'm sitting here
with my
This meeting is adjourned.